Hi, everybody. This is Jennifer again, and I am in a second interview with Monica, and this time we're going to be talking about the history of South Africa, though we may stray wherever the conversation takes us. So, hi, Monica.
Hi, Jen.
First of all, I want you to tell the audience about your website.
Oh, SouthAfricaProject.info?
Yes.
Yes, please go there, and we started a new thing, Living Waters. Foundation to help the whites in South Africa, and this is really, very serious because I just got noticed that they're going to kick out 240 little white children from an orphanage because the orphanage is too white and the government's not helping. So please, people, go onto the website, get the address, and let us help our people in South Africa. Thank you for that. God bless you all.
The orphanage is too white, so
it's too white. Yes, the orphanage is 70% white.
Oh my goodness!
And it's got to be 75% black.
Wow!
So there's no bread, no milk, no food, no veggies, nothing for those kids that who didn't ask to be there, who didn't ask to be discriminated against. But of course, South Africa is now the most equal country in the world, and it's the most democratic country in the world, that Europe can learn from South Africa. So, yes, what they can learn from South Africa, Europe, the whole Western world, including the United States, is what is going on there is happening here, and it's going to happen all over the world. And if we don't wake up, the white race will be in a museum somewhere, and maybe all these blacks will line up to go and have a look at what the white person looked like 10 years ago.
Yeah, it is getting more and more frightening. I wanted to talk about two things before we get into the history along those lines. I remember first subject was when I was in Palestine, there was an South African black activist who was also a professor at Harvard of something no doubt like sociology. And even he admitted that the Palestinian situation was far worse than that of black Africans under apartheid. And the Afrikaners never did things like drop one-ton bombs on them or incinerate their children with phosphorus bombs and so on and so forth, which is quite the regular thing in Palestine. So I thought I would bring that up. The second subject that kind of intrigues me, when I was on a show, it was an interview with a Muslim station out of Africa, and this was several years ago, and somebody in the audience called up and said, well, it's about time that America had an African president. I was a little taken aback, but I didn't say anything. And, you know, but you have to compare that attitude with the attitude of Africans in Africa, black Africans, that white people have got to leave Africa. They have to go. Now, they believe in black majority rule in Africa, but they believe in black minority rule in America.
And the majority will never rule, like I'm explaining, just explained yesterday to somebody about the example is in Nigeria. They're fighting there and they say, oh, the Muslims are killing off the Christians. No, that's not true. It's a racial war. They've got 478 different tribes there. And they will never get together, and they will never work together because they hate each other. They don't speak the same language. They don't have the same culture. It's like in South Africa, it's the same thing. You know, I mean, I didn't know. I only found out this past week is that Zuma sent the troops in to Soweto a few months ago, and they killed about 9,000 Zimbabweans.
Right.
So this is what they live on is war.
And it's never reported here. I mean, there are just scores of wars on the African continent going on all the time.
Of course.
I mean, we know some of them, Sierra Leone, Nigeria, Congo, Burundi, Uganda, Angola. But it's constant. And it's not like it's a big war. It's just it's war all the time.
Oh, well, it's all the time. I mean, the Zulus fought a sub-tribe of the Zulu nation. Now they call them Matabeles, and they had to flee to Rhodesia. And now they are minority. They're the Shona and the majority, and Mugabe is the Shona. And so he'll be ruling again. I mean, the election as June 19th. And he's going to win by a landslide because this is what they do. They put the fear into these people that if you don't vote for me, I burn your house down or I'll kill your children and blah, blah, blah. And this is what Africa is all about, is that it's the strongest survive. That's right. It's the law of the jungle. This is just what it is. And because the white people all over the world, showed these people weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why what is happening. I mean, I knew in 2008 when they lined all these presidents up, and I said to my husband, I said, you know what? Obama's going to win the election. He said, oh, never. Never. And I said, I'm telling you, they trained him like they did Mandela, and he looks even like Mandela. I said, she looks like Winnie Mandela, and I'm telling you now, they're going to be in the White House. Uh-huh. It just happened like that because this is time now for them to be there, because the fight is not democratic, it's not Republican, it's not a third party or a third position or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
This is the annihilation of the white race, period. And not before the white people understand this, we will not get anywhere. I mean, case in point, I talked to a neighbor around the corner here. She told me the other day, this past week in actual fact, that it'll take another 100 years and we will all be equal because we will all get intermarried and they will not remember that they hate us because they had to sit in the back of the bus. No. They don't hate us because they sat in the back of the bus. They hate us because we're white. I don't care if they come to the attack like they do in South Africa, they're not going to ask her if she's a bleeding heart liberal.
It was, you know, it's funny. I was just talking to Eli James, and he made the point at the end of the conversation that in the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, the first people they killed were the liberals. And I've forgotten about that, but that's true. They were the Mensheviks. They were the so-called moderates. You know, they wanted to, you know, moderate the differences. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Here they are telling people that in 50 years it's going to be minority white country. And the way they're selling it is that, well, this is just multiculturalism and we're just going to share the government and it's all going to be beautiful. But then if you go to websites like La Raza and who openly declare they want to take the country.
Oh, yes. And I mean, I don't know.
Just say it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't know if you know about the movement in Florida, Uhuru.
In Florida?
In Uhuru is in Florida.
No, yes. I did not. I know what Uhuru is because we talked about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I forgot to mention to you last time. Uhuru's in Florida. I nearly freaked out. Somebody wanted to know what it means. And I said, well, you know, I'll get you some information. And then it came up. They've got their own newspaper. And I don't know what. Uhuru is alive and well in Florida.
Oh, my God.
You know, I mean, really, you know, I don't want to sound bad or you know, criticizing the Western whites, but they are really stupid because they really do not know these people. They do not understand it. And as you say, like Eli said, the Mensheviks were the first to fall. We had the riots in 1976 in Soweto. It was in the paper. This woman was really upset because she said, I can't understand why they killed my brother. He had the stickers on his truck. And he's a liberal, and he agrees with it, and he loves Mandela, and blah, blah, blah. Why did they kill him?
Wow.
They killed him because he's white. And then I had this, we had the gas station, and I remember one of our customers was a Jewish dentist, and he stormed into my office and said, come and have a look at my car. It's full of dents, and the windscreen's gone. And then they attacked me with bricks and stones, and they wanted to kill me. Well, when I went into Soweto today, and he said, I can't understand it. I was calling and screaming and yelling and telling them, I'm a Jew. I said, oh, you know, I'm so sorry, but they really thought you're white, you know.
Right.
He was not impressed. But, I mean, they are not going to ask you if you voted for Obama.
Right.
They're not going to ask you if you're a liberal. The color of skin will be your uniform. I think Lincoln Rockwell put it very well in his book, White Power. That's the uniform you're going to wear one day will be the color of your skin.
And it is turning into this because everything, but they're bringing it in, and this is what makes it hard to understand. they're selling it as multiculturalism and as mutual, you know, all these different groups. But if you look at what's going on behind the scenes in America, all the different races, whether they were here or not, you know, it's not just the blacks, but any group has and is the government actually helps to fund their race-based politics. I mean, they call themselves the Samoan American this and the Chinese American students and the and the La Raza, which is pretty direct. That's the race, Spanish, or Aztlan, and that means they're going back to – they want to go back to an Aztec empire.
Yes, and those – why? So they can cut your heart out while you're alive to make them brave like they did.
And the only people who are not allowed to organize are the whites, and that's because they have something called white privilege. But if you're not allowed to organize yourself politically, you don't have any privilege.
Well, the whites nowhere have any privilege.
No, they don't. I mean, and the countries all over Europe are being inundated now with Arabs who hate their guts. Of course, it's understandable because Western countries have been warring on the Arabs. And it is dangerous because they are cultivating blacks now too in setting up like a mutual civil rights type of relationship, and they want to lead the blacks. I'm sure they do in Africa.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, they enslaved them a long time ago, and but I mean, it's now I know I'm going to be clobbered over the head, but I don't blame these Muslims for being upset because because they got such a raw deal from white. Over the centuries, I mean, going there, I mean, I don't know, I just watched it for a while. What is it, that Kingdom of Heaven? They made fun of all these Arabs, hanging them, kicking them off of the walls, and hanging them by the thousands. I mean, really, why? Because the church tell them that they're infidels? I mean, you know, it's like somebody told me the other day, she said, these Muslims going with this Boston story, and I said, don't believe everything you hear. The Muslims listen, we must kick them out of the country. And she said, and burn the Quran. I said, have you ever read the Quran? She said, no. I said, well, then you can't say anything about it. I've read it. I said, but have you read the Talmud? Yes. I said, well, now you know. I said, but nobody is pushing burning the Talmud because you can't go against God's chosen people.
Right. Exactly.
It is easier. Yep. I mean,
of course. I mean, we have been had our attention deflected towards the Muslims. And I mean, there has been, I think, as I understand history, there's been movement back and forth because they did invade Europe in the 9th century.
Of course they did.
And then we've invaded the Middle East and so on and forth, back and forth. And the Ottoman Empire, in league with the Jews in the Ottoman Empire in the early years, invaded Europe.
Well, you know, Ottoman was a Jew, of course, you know.
Yeah. That got involved in that. And so there's, but you know, that war was done. I mean, there was quiet between the Christian and the Muslim world.
Yeah.
In the 19th century, it was really over, you know, but now it's been, of course, because of this constant slaughter in the Middle East been triggered up again. There's that. But let's get back to South Africa and let's get back to the history because this kind of intrigues me. The position of the Afrikaners is so, I mean, they have suffered also because of the British.
Oh my goodness, yes.
So, you want to talk about that?
Sure, yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's the Dutch, of course, started the halfway station and settled on the southern part of Africa, Cape Town, Cape of Good Hope, as we talked about before, and built the settlement there, and then more and more and more whites came in from Holland, from Germany. The Germans really came in mass in about 1836 because there was a drought and terrible starvation in Germany. And of course, the Irish came over, the French came over because they ran away from the persecution of the Catholic Church and settled down in the Cape it's called Franschhoek. That's the corner of the French. There are still people speaking French. My cousin, in actual fact, is giving a tutoring in French. And he went to France and he studied at the Sorbonne. And so he's doing that, keeping the culture up. And it's still very French and
interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, because Americans, I did think of South Africa as Dutch.
No.
It's not Dutch. This is not.
Let me explain why people think like that. It's because the Germans fled Germany and they embarked in Rotterdam. to go to South Africa. And this is what they ask you, you know, embarkation, Rotterdam. Okay, then immediately you're Dutch. More Germans came to South Africa than Dutch.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And Afrikaans is a German language that's German derived, or
it is a, it's a, what they call a Plattdeutsch. You understand what I'm saying? It's a, the lowlands.
Low German.
It's related to Flemish. I mean, my Flemish friends, we have long discussions in politics. I speak Afrikaans, they speak Flemish, and we understand each other.
Okay.
Well, and as they say, well, you speak Flemish with an Afrikaans accent, and then we speak Afrikaans in a Flemish. You know, and it's related to Frisian.
Okay.
And so it's an actual fact. It's the youngest language, but it's the oldest language.
Interesting.
So we can trace it back to. I mean, I can read Danish. I can't speak it. But okay. Every third word or whatever, I can make out what they try to say.
Okay, right.
Because of similar words, and of course, eventually English also slipped into it. But yes. It's a young language, but it's an old language. It's being taught in Moscow.
Interesting.
Afrikaans, yes. And if you go to Europe and you speak Afrikaans, you're okay.
Yeah.
Okay, absolutely. Coming back to the British, so they came, and of course we were ruled by the Dutch. In 1802, the British came over, and they without a shot being fired, also treason with Admiral de Mist, he just gave it over to the British. And, and then the problem started. And in 1815, we had the first rebellion.
Of the Boers, the Boer Rebellion?
The Boer Rebellion against the British, yes. And they just hanged them of being rebels, of course. I've got the whole court case. Of course, it's written in Dutch, but this is High Dutch, and I really have a problem in understanding it. But, yes, they were traitors. And, of course, they brought in apartheid, but equality too, that they were always sided with the Hottentots against the white settlers.
Interesting. The British did that too in the United States. The Cherokee aligned themselves with the British against the settlers, hoping to keep the settlers out.
Yeah.
And from going west. And this, of course, worked for the British because it was British arms agents who sold weaponry to the Cherokee and to the other Indian tribes who used it on each other and on settlers. So,
Well,
this, very similar history.
yes, it is really, really so parallel. But anyway, this is what happened, and then the great track started, you know, and this one went this way, that one went that way, and Louis Trichardt went up as far as Lourenço Marques in Mozambique.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So there's still I don't know if the monument's still there. But they commemorated the Boers tracking into Mozambique those years.
And, with wagons, covered wagons.
With covered wagons and oxen pulling it. And they had to push these wagons over the mountain.
Wow.
And you know what? And we can be proud, Jennifer, we women. The women were behind it and said, we're not going to tolerate this. We're going to get out of this. And they pushed the men to go over the mountains. And they said, we're going to freedom. And this is what we're going to do.
Right. Well, that's like the American pioneer woman. I mean, she had to definitely to pitch in. She was no lady living on tea and biscuits, not at all. It was a hard life. So, but then it seems as though the British have always worked against the interest of the Afrikaans people.
Always. Because we're a Germanic people and the hatred towards the Germans.
But where did that come from? Because the English themselves are Teutonic. I mean, they're German people.
I know.
Celtic, it's a mix. I mean, different races of Europe. But this hatred that the English got, and they, of course, expressed it in the World War, both World Wars.
Yeah, exactly. Because, well, I'll tell you why. Because they're under the heel of the Jew for many centuries.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be, because it's insane. Yeah. I mean, it's equally insane that Americans, who as a people – there's a huge, tremendous number of 40% of Americans or something, I don't know, a large number, have German blood. It's a huge part of America, and we destroyed Germany.
Yeah, it's insane, absolutely insane, that we destroy our own people for the benefit of the satanic people who want to really destroy the white race, because this is what it's all about.
Well, that's what we're doing their dirty work.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely, doing their dirty work. Yeah, they're doing it on all levels, not only killing people with bullets, but killing their minds. and so forth. So anyway, so this is how we trekked up there, and then of course they discovered gold and diamonds, and then
so where, okay, so that brought in the banks, yes, and Cecil and Roth and the Rothschild and the Oppenheimers. Yeah. Where are the mines in South Africa?
The gold mines are really all over the Witwatersrand. That's Johannesburg area and parts of the Orange Free State. And of course, the diamonds they found in Kimberley, that is of course the Cape Province.
Okay.
Now this is where De Beers started, and Cecil Rhodes came in. He is the, they say, I can't say this is true because we don't know, realize how much of this, the illegitimate son of Rothschild. And he was asked by Abercrombie, a Briton who came to South Africa, and he wrote the history, the secret history of the old South African Republic, the ZAR, South African Republic. Okay.
Okay.
And he said in 1894, he asked Cecil Rhodes, he said, why are you sending the diamonds out to be cut in Antwerp, in Belgium? And he said, because my boss told me so.
Okay, so they, okay. And that was starting when, at the end of the 19th century?
Yes, that started the end of the 19th century. And of course, it just got worse and worse and worse. And then the Jameson raid, and that was an absolute disaster because he did it too early. And then of course they declared that we had the first war of independence in 1896, and we won the war against the British, and of course they will never forgive us for that.
Okay, and 1896?
About 1896, around 1896, okay. Yes. So anyway, so the second one broke out in 1899, and this is what Paul Kruger said. He said, you don't want me to give only the vote to the foreigners. He gave concessions upon concessions, and I mean, he was criticized for that too, and I criticized him for that also, because he really surrounded him with too many Jews and too many Dutch, the Dutch being very liberal also.
They've been in cahoots with him for a long time.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we know that the Dutch went with Germany up to, it didn't suit them anymore, and then they turned around and started attacking the Dutch, the Germans, so they've been, what is a really horrible word for them, cheeseheads, you know. So we're getting racist, what they say. But anyway, what can I tell you? So the Anglo-Boer War broke out with 60,000 Boers in the field. And I mean, we were farmers. We didn't have an army. We didn't really have a police force.
Wow.
They were not trained, but I mean, they were trained in hunting. So we had about 60,000 soldiers. And in the end, England had 450,000 troops in the
field.
How
many?
450,000.
Wow.
Wow. Yes, wow. But we kept them busy for 3+ years. And if it wasn't for the concentration camps, the men just capitulated. And although the women said it doesn't matter how many of us die, just keep on with the war. But they stopped it. And of course, if 27,000 women and children were not murdered in the camp, we would have been 18 million whites in South Africa.
Wow. So this is just to explain this to listeners. The first concentration camp in the world really was in South Africa, and the people in it were
Afrikaners, yes.
White women and children, and they were kept there by the British in this war to blackmail the African males into just giving up the war effort, and they did.
That's correct. Yeah, so, one of the reasons also, just to expand on this a little bit, is that they put them in these camps, and they burned their houses down, and they burned all the fields, and they burned the animals. They didn't shoot them. They just made a circle around them and set them afire. The British did that, so that the Boers wouldn't have anything to eat, and of course they accused the Boer women of being traitors, of giving these horrible Boers information where the British are. I mean, really? It is, fighting a war so unequal, it's not funny. They had the best weaponry and trained soldiers and blah, blah, blah.
They were at the height of the British Empire.
Yes, exactly. And then so this is why they put the Boer women in the camps, and then they starved, of course, to death, and they put fish hooks in the meat. So they ripped the inside.
They put what in the meat?
Fish hooks.
Fish hooks.
Yes. And they put fine glass in the sugar.
Ugh.
So yes, so this, you know, the one Cape Rebel, Cape Rebel at Gideon Skipper, was shot outside the city called Karafrenet in the Karoo. They put him on a rock there. The rock is there with a little plague, and so this is where he was shot. He was nearly dead already. He was bleeding inside because of the glass cutting his intestine.
Mm.
And, but they still shot him because he was a Cape Rebel. And, you know, and of course we had a lot of Boers from the Cape fighting on the side of the ZAR, or as you say, the ZAR, yeah, and the Republic of the Orange Free State.
So those three, the Cape, the Orange Free State, and Transvaal, would be the core of the Afrikaner community?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. And where? What about the British today there? I mean, are they concentrated? And the relationship between the Brits, the British descended people in South Africa and the Afrikaners, what's it like at this point? I mean, the British were the quote-unquote liberals.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, well, of course, they're still living the high life because most of them have money. They're living in the northern suburbs of Johannesburg or in Cape Town, you know, mm-hmm. Sea Point or wherever. They can pay for their apartheid or being separate or whatever they want.
Exactly.
Yes, they can pay for it and have these high walls, and they have the guards outside with AK-47s. Or now it's the latest, of course, is M16. Getting that, like Malema has his M16s with his little army. And this is what's happened. The British, of course, and then the Afrikaans liberals, it's the same story.
They're going to play this out. It's going to.
They think they're going to play this out. But as I said,
weren't you attacked by the Xhosa at some point? I mean, the wars with the African tribes.
Oh yes, we had 10 Kaffa tribes, Kaffa wars, as we called it those days, Kaffa wars. Yes, by the Xhosas, we won them all. But yes, and then of course this Angoma of the Xhosa said. They must slaughter all the cattle, and then all the white people will disappear. And of course, it never happened. So
okay.
Yeah.
And this may also explain Mandela's attitude, because he's Katumba, but he's a Tembo.
Yes, he's not a purebred Xhosa. No.
But he has Xhosa blood and influence.
Yes, he's got Xhosa blood in him and Hottentot. And of course, the Bushmen really, or the Hottentots, that they were. You know, they were the only people that the whites really met. There were no blacks in South Africa, but the Hottentots. But what happened is when these blacks came from the north, they started fighting the Hottentots. They killed the men and take the women.
Uh-huh. So they have all these half-breeds. Okay.
Yeah, they have all these half-breeds, yes. Yes, so this is how it happened, and this is where Mandela is coming from, you know, being a temple.
Okay. And the Zulu, you also had a war. That's the famous Blood River story.
The famous Blood River, that's really so incredible. And I can tell you a personal experience when I was in high school. We had a history tour to Dingaan Stad. That is Dingaan City. You know, it's only the Zulu huts. They built them round, completely round, because they're so scared of the Tokoloshe that we discussed in the last discussion. Anyway, and... So we all slept in the museum there, I remember. There was this old Zulu, I mean, he was gray. And I can tell you this, when a black gets gray, like very old.
Right.
Like, really, very old. He was sitting there on his haunches like one. No white man can sit like that for hours.
Right.
But they're both different, so they can do it. And he was scrawny, old. I mean, he was old and he was so getting tiny. And then he looked at me and he said to me, Nonna, we had to fight those men coming out of the heavens all dressed in white.
Huh.
Yeah. Yes, it was a divine intervention that day. I had a discussion with somebody this morning, asked me about it because he's very interested. He said, mm-hmm. But, you know, there were only 1,000 Zulus there. I said, no, it's estimated between 15,000 and 20,000 of them. And there were only 438 white men.
Wow.
And one was wounded.
Wow.
Not one of them died that day. Yeah, but you had weapons. I said, yes, front loaders. Uh-huh. You know, and if those spears are flying, I'm telling you, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And when they start chanting, I mean, have you ever heard this? When they start chanting, Jennifer, it's the most systemic sound if your blood drops off.
It has to, because it's just a screaming murder.
Yeah.
And it's to unnerve you. And they had to have come in waves, too, because the Zulu were famous as warriors, as the great warriors of Africa.
Yeah, oh, yes, of course. I mean, they have Chaka Zulu. I don't know, Chaka Zulu, absolutely. And he didn't trust his brother, the Ngaan. And I mean, they of course, this is how they do it. They don't trust and then they just murder and then they take over. Chaka was a very famous. And you know how they make their feet so hard? Like, I mean, it's like wearing shoes.
From running barefoot.
They barefoot, but they hit it on the ground for hours a day.
Wow.
And then it comes like a soul underneath. So they can run for miles without any problem. Well, we can't do that.
Right.
And the Zulu maidens, it depends on how, the best maiden is the one who kicks the highest. She will get the offer and being paid Lobola for her family.
Wow.
Yes. This is our.
So it's really a culture based on war.
Oh, it's a culture based, of course, yes. Of course, yes. And the woman is a non-entity. She just becomes chattel because she's bought.
Right.
She's bought. And I mean, this is now getting back to Zuma. President Zuma's got four wives. I don't know how much they paid for them, but he's got four wives. And he's got his own city now called Zumaville in
Is he Zulu or is he?
He's Zulu.
Okay.
He's Zulu, yeah. And I mean, of course, they pretend that they get on with Mandela and so forth, but they hate each other.
And Malema, what's he?
Malema is Zulu.
Zulu, okay. So are they coming into power by any chance? Is that?
Well, with the next election, yes, I suppose they will get if there's no revolution. And this is what we're waiting for, according to. To the seer, the prophet, he said there will be four elections and then all hell will break loose. And they're really pushing it now more and more and more. And maybe the revolution will start with Mandela's death.
Right. Okay. But it might just grow.
Oh, it is growing because
it's just
growing
in power. Mm-hmm.
Now because the women are getting upset. I don't know if I mentioned that.
You did about not getting houses, but.
Exactly. So, and that's getting, and not getting houses, you know. It can be funny if it's not really tragic, but what they do to their own. They built some houses. I think since 1994 they built, 300 houses in some townships. But they stole the cement. So all they did is just put the bricks on top of sand. And when the first rains came, it washed out the sand and then the houses collapsed. So it's what they did. It is. This is just funny. When America built the runway for the B-52 bombers,
yeah,
they thought that there will be a white uprising. They built it in Botswana, just outside Gaborone.
Uh-huh.
They really had problems. Which the blacks will go there and steal the material. But eventually, after years, they finished building that. So there's a big runway now. And, of course, the United Nations troops are coming in.
Are coming in that way.
Peacekeeping, yeah.
The peacekeepers. Back to the 20th century and with your relations with Britain. In the First World War, of course, there was a German colony, and the Afrikaners aligned themselves just for cultural reasons and also because I guess the British wanted to get the German colony. Is that true?
That's correct. German Southwest Africa, Deutsche mm-hmm. West Africa. Yes, because there's diamonds there.
More
diamonds. I mean, it's very arid. It's so sort of semi-desert. It's a beautiful country, beautiful country. They don't have so many blacks. They have the hereros there, dressing like Westerners, like they did in Germany many years ago. And Windhoek still, it's unreal. There's the Göringstrasse still stands, Wilhelmstrasse still stands, and the capital is still Windhoek. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Windhoek beer is one of the best in the world. So yes, in 1914 with the Boer rebellion, they got in their horses and they went to German Southwest Africa and they signed a contract with the Germans that the Boers will never attack Germany.
Okay, right.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, and the Germans gave them weapons and trained them, you know, gave them uniforms and so forth, so and horses and whatever. So
right.
So this is after the First World War, Deutsche West Africa became part of South Africa.
Okay, so it became part of, so South Africa just grew over time.
Oh, yes, became a really, really a very prosperous country, very prosperous.
Sure.
And I mean, of course, and the sanctions started when we became a republic in 1961. I mean, we couldn't get movies from Britain. We couldn't get this, of course, America only import. There was no sanctions for chromium or platinum or things like that.
Right.
Everything else. And we really became self-sufficient. I mean, yeah. Both my brothers are mechanics, and we had to make something to fit because we couldn't import cars, so we started making the Golf, Volkswagen Golf, and exported to Chile and Brazil.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know South Africa was a very wealthy nation.
Yeah.
Up until, then, I guess, 90,
yes.
early 90s.
Yeah. And then, really, yes, and we had, you know, what I think the growth was about 6%, and maybe inflation was 2%. It was really wonderful, but they couldn't allow that to keep on going like that. It had to be destroyed. It's so similar what they did to Germany as what they did to South Africa. It's the same story. They just used the blacks now to destroy the whites instead of sending in the white troops, the American troops, or the British troops.
The wealth of the country would be, well, it's being destroyed because the blacks aren't running the place, right?
Yeah.
And they're just trying to give everything away or fighting with each other, bribing, taking bribes. But of that incredible mineral wealth, whose hands is it in at this point?
They won't ever change. Oh, they're talking of nationalizing that, but they just get payoffs. This is what they do. It's like what the Sharpton does here in Jesse Jackson.
Okay, they get paid off and they play paid. The game and they.
Oh, they play the game, and then this is where with the arms deal, a scandal. The book is coming out next week, and I just have to have this book because all the figures are in there. How much money Zuma and Mandela got for it?
Wow.
To buy the absolute weapons from the United States, from Germany, or from Britain, yeah.
So this government is armed by Britain and United States.
Yeah. The it is incredible how the whites really gang up on the whites.
They have ganged up on the South Africans, and that's been the story since as long as I can remember. I mean, we were just told us to – terrible story that South Africans were all racist, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then the country is now totally destroyed.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, not totally. I'm sure there's some infrastructure. It takes longer than 20 years to destroy a country, but they're doing their best, evidently.
Yeah. Oh, but it's going to solve eventually. But, I mean, I remember, you know, we could go to just a stupid little example how things change. We could go to Switzerland, to Greece, and to England without a visa. All the other countries, we need a visa, okay?
Okay.
Guess what? Since the ANC took over, we need visas for all countries.
But, I mean, can South African whites, it's very difficult to come into the United States, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness, it's a nightmare. It's absolutely a nightmare. I don't know if I told you when I came over here the first time, I filled in the form and they asked you in this form if you're a prostitute, if you're a drug user, and if you have any affiliation with Nazi Germany. And I just stared at it, and I thought, why? And my friend who went with me hit me on my shin, and he said, concentrate and don't laugh, just fill in the form.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I had to go for three interviews, and they even knew that we had a little farm with cows, and she asked me to. The consul was Jewish. He said to me, "But who's going to take care of your mother's cows when you leave for holiday to the United States?" And I just looked at her. I said, "But I don't take care of the cows now, you know." But there was a Jew in front of me, and he said, "I have to emigrate immediately out of this country." This was in 1993.
Okay.
And she said, "No problem, sir. Go to the ambassador in Pretoria and he'll give you all the papers. You'll be out of this country within 2 weeks."
Wow.
Wow.
They protect their own.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And this is funny because, of course, the revolution, the Nelson Mandela's revolution, was Jewish orchestrated and supported through and through. But then they decided, well, it's getting rough, so we're going to get out.
Yeah, well, of course. But it's again, the grassroots. I mean, these Jews are still in power, and it's very interesting how The blacks really hate the Jews.
Really?
They don't like them. They don't like the Mandela's pro-Palestinian.
Right, that's true. But you know, the history is complicated because the Afrikaners at one point, or the apartheid African state, was in league with Israel, and yet they were working on the technology of the bomb together. And at the same time, you've got leftist Jews like Joe Slovo and all that crowd supporting the whole ANC and the communist movement.
But this explain why we had to work with Israel.
Okay.
Because Israel started all the sanctions, telling America to imply sanctions against South Africa with weaponry and everything. And, of course, the whole West. So the only country we could work with was Israel.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. This is
and that leaves them the business. That's also a part of this.
Oh, business is business. Darling.
Business is business.
and so we Eagles. We Yiddish all the shekels. This is what we do, and this is what it's all about. It's you know that we developed that long cannon was a ball billet. He was also murdered. There's a book about it. His last name was Ball. I think he was a Canadian, or he fled to Canada. But anyway, they murdered him, and we used those cannons in Angola against the communists. Yeah.
Hmm.
So, yeah, no. Oh, the Jews know how to play this game. They take everything out of the equation, and then you don't have a choice. I mean,
But that's clever. They talk the Western nations into placing sanctions on South Africa, and then they pick up all the trade.
Of course.
They had done that. Actually, I read that in a book. Got it, some Palestinian think tank type thing in D.C. And they did the same thing to America, where high development of military technology that America was pursuing and developing, they had imposed some kind of sanctions on America or some kind of, you know, self-imposed drop in that industry. And then they picked it up. So the Europeans went to them for this, you know, high-tech weaponry because they couldn't deal with the Americans because the Americans were under. That would have come from the left. Because they would have stopped the development trade or weaponry from the left-hand side, then picked up the trade in Israel. So,
exactly.
So that's the way that game goes.
The only thing you must ask is, we don't know who's the one benefiting out of all this.
Exactly.
But nobody asks the question, do they?
Never. Not in this country, because they just have such a weird view of the world. And we have the media to thank for that. But so what that takes us through some of the past and brings us up to the present. I know that you're very frightened about what's happening there now. What are any possibilities for hope anywhere in the world for South Africa, for South African whites? What's going to happen? What is happening to them? Is there any growing interest in the subject?
Well, there is more websites coming up and more people talking about it, at least. But, I mean, it's like you and I, we're fighting, waving our arms against windmills. You know what I'm saying? But at least the word is going out. Mm-hmm. I mean, because the people don't know about this.
No, they don't. They have no idea. And they have a completely distorted view.
He said, but it's all your fault, these blacks killing you because you gave them jobs in your houses. So I said, so what do we do with 40 million of them, leaving them sitting on the front porch on their rocker chairs and paying them welfare?
You know, that's fascinating because in this country you will find liberals giving Mexicans jobs, and the Mexicans who come here work as lawn care people and housemaids.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're really doing the same thing.
Yes.
Of course, there is a black-Mexican war brewing. And resentment, hostilities, the streets of American cities are war zones between ethnic gangs. So it's very similar.
Of course it's similar. When I said, but what about the Mexicans, he said it's different. I said, I don't know how you can see this is different. You're sitting on a powder keg.
Yeah.
These people hate you.
Yeah. I mean, and they say it. You can get on the internet and see, not just the rabble, but there are university professors, Mexican university professors in America who are promoting, they are laughing, they're gloating, they're saying this is the last generation of white Americans. We're taking over.
Yes, of course.
So it's not like they're hiding it.
Yeah. No, of course they're not hiding it. I just, You know, if it wasn't so terribly tragic, and it kills me to even think about it, if we all would take all the whites off the planet of the Earth, what then? What are they going to do with what they gained from all this? Because they can't even maintain it. I mean, case in point, this winter in South Africa is going to be the coldest winter, and they won't have any electricity because the electric power plants are not working. They're falling apart because they haven't maintained them in 19 years. And even before, when the white government saw, well, you know, we're getting out of this, they withdrew all this, they were not, so it's even longer than that. And the one at Kuberg, it's a nuclear power plant. And that's going to blow. That's one of the predictions of the CIA. He said it's going to blow. And it was built by the French, and they got the French to come and try and repair it. And he said, I don't know how, because they messed it up so bad, I don't know what to do. He went back to France. So it's still not fixed. It's like the sewage. Mm. The sewage.
And disease, of course.
3 or 4% of the sewage plants are working.
Oh, my God.
I mean, the acid water from the mine are coming up. It's on the surface now. And when you walk, that acid goes into your feet, and it'll kill you. It kills everything. And they haven't done anything about it because they don't know why, how, and they don't care because they're in power now. And this is all they wanted. Mm. So they can steal the money of the white man, and they can build their fancy houses, and they think that'll be okay. And it's never going to dry up because guess what? The liberal West will keep on giving them money.